This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Very special guest here today, Neil Giuliano, one-time mayor of Tempe from 1994 to 2004, responsible, among other things, for that gorgeous lake that I drive by almost every day.
That I fish in almost every week, by the way.
Yeah.
It's amazing lake.
Do you catch anything?
Heck yeah.
All right, good.
I think in honor of your return, they're draining the lake.
They are, only to make it better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that rubber bladder, a lot of people questioned.
Well, you know, that was all we could find back in 1996, 97.
Didn't they have like a 20-year guarantee, and then at 20 years and 2 months, the thing went?
Something like that.
So 2005, you left Arizona. Why?
Well, I had finished my terms as mayor, 10 years as mayor, and I had finished up at Arizona State University after a 24-year career in seven different positions, the final being the co-director of the presidential debate in 2004 between George Bush and John Kerry, which was a great job for 18 months.
I've forgotten that. That must have been.
We worked 18 months on a 90-minute meeting between two men, mm-hmm. But it was great. And then I was looking for new challenges, and I was kind of thinking, can I grow? Can I stretch? What can I become? And the National Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation came to me and said, "We're looking for a president and CEO. Would you consider it?" We talked, and I went and did that for 4 years. And GLAAD, of course, is the community education and anti-defamation voice for the LGBT community. Doesn't do the political work, but that was HRC and the legal work by Lambda Legal. But really working on the vast cultural
HRC
Human Rights Campaign.
Okay, that's not Hillary Rodham Clinton.
No.
Good catch.
Human Rights Campaign does the political work. Lambda Legal does the legal work. And GLAAD was doing the cultural change, anti-defamation work in the movement for LGBT rights. And it was really a tremendous opportunity to do that for 4 years. And then I wrote a book, traveled a little bit, took some time off, and then I was approached by a search firm out of San Francisco to be the CEO at San Francisco AIDS Foundation, where I just finished up 5 years leading the transformation from dealing with HIV/AIDS in a sickness and disease management model of care to what is necessary now, which is a health and wellness management model, because folks who have HIV are living well with HIV as long as they stay on their medication. So I had a great experience up in San Francisco, and then was talking with Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton one day and Grady Gamage, who I think a lot of folks know, local attorney.
That's the person, not the building.
The person, not the building. And I said, you know, I've given notice to the foundation in San Francisco. I'm going to transition from there after 5 years. If you hear of anything, let me know. And they said, well, Greater Phoenix Leadership is looking for a new president and CEO. And I said, well, that's interesting. Maybe we should talk about that. And one thing led to another. And I was hired by the board end of last summer and started full time in January.
Well, we've spoken of GPL here, but just we should backtrack because our whole audience may not have picked up on that. Who is GPL?
Greater Phoenix Leadership. Greater Phoenix Leadership is a consortium of about 100 CEOs of leading business organizations in the region, from our hospitals to our banks to our major sports teams to our investment firms, major developers, some small, some large. And we work at the intersection of the business community with government politics, with education, and with philanthropy. So the four legs of the chair are business, government politics, education, and philanthropy. And the business community engages in all of those in meaningful ways, individually and collectively, through Greater Phoenix Leadership.
And this it sounds to people that from the outside like, okay, this is a club of CEOs. This is what this is. You guys get together, you guys have a breakfast, you guys talk about, you know, the shaping politics in the world, and then you go about your day. I think it's a lot more than that, and I don't want to just paint over it. It's not just like a monthly meeting and you go on. What's the nuts and bolts of this?
Yeah, there's day-to-day activities. We're involved with the legislature for various issues, whether it's right now, the important things are promoting the advancement and improvement of education in Arizona. We're solidly behind Proposition 123 and ensuring that passes on May 17th.
Want to explain what that is?
Prop 123 is a proposal initiated by the governor, then approved by the legislature and sent to the voters to change the formula from which we draw funds from the state's land trust fund and allocate it for K through 12 education. And then some other general appropriations for education as well. But it will put about $3.5 billion into education over the next 10 years. So it's a 10-year program. We think it's very, very vital that it be passed. And yet we also know that it's a 10-year program, and we have to be thinking even beyond what that 10 years will mean for education in Arizona. And so a Greater Phoenix leadership and our members are staying involved and engaged on what will come after Proposition 123, or we're going to call that Project 456. And we're beginning to think about—
I see what you did there. Nicely
we're
done.
Thinking right. about, well, what does come next? Because we have a preschool through 20, a P20 education platform and work that has to come in Arizona to improve the entire education ecosystem, the entire continuum, and that's what we care about.
And now, so you know 123, you know Prop 123 pretty well, obviously, if you guys are sticking behind it.
Yes.
And you say, what comes next? I think from the GPL standpoint, what comes next after passage is what we're concerned about. Are there benchmarks in here that the GPL will be watching and monitoring along those 10 years to see if it's working?
Of course.
Okay.
Oh, of course. There's standards are built into the entire program to make sure that benchmarks are being met and measurements along the way. But what's important and what GPL's role is to convene and engage all the stakeholders. From the education community, from the business community, from philanthropy, other folks who have a great interest, and identify what will the options be, and then work with our public policymakers to evaluate all of those, and then come to some decisions and encourage our policymakers to make the decisions that are best for the long term.
And just to give a little perspective on this, and we've had folks from the education community here talking about Prop 123. That was in part the negotiated settlement.
It was.
When the legislature was sued, and it restores about two-thirds of the money that was mandated by a vote of the people.
Correct.
So I think what they will say is, look, this is not the final. This doesn't even quite make us whole. This is just to sort of dig us a little bit out of the trench.
It's the beginning.
Yeah.
It's the start. And I remind folks who are questionable about 123 that it is the deal that the plaintiffs accepted from that lawsuit.
Yep.
And our job is
something rather than nothing.
Something. Well, that's one way to put it, I guess. Yeah. And but let's move forward. Let's pass 123 and then let's stay together and work together for what we know has to be next.
Do you smell any opposition to 123? It seems like everybody in the whole world is in on this.
I'm going to hold you off on that answer. Right, Doc? We got to stop for a quick break if we could. More
okay.
with Neil Giuliano when we come back. Arizona's prodigal son has returned as the head of GPL. It's coming up next.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
And I hate it when I have to cut people off, but Doc, you asked a question right before the break and we just plumb ran out of time. Going to redo, 123 duo.
We talked about 123.
We did.
And do you smell any significant opposition anywhere on this one?
Well, there are some political leaders in the state of Arizona and a couple folks here and there. But look, the poll that just came out recently that showed the larger consortium of Arizona business folks in Arizona, the strong consensus is that we need to be investing in education. And so we're going to work really, really hard to get voters to understand that and get them to support Proposition 123.
I've certainly seen the polling that supports that. And not only is it high, but it is shot up astronomically
Good.
Over the last 2 years. Basically, I think as a product of educational cuts that got to the point where people were really feeling them at home.
That was it.
I think it took a couple of years. It's sort of like you make a cut the first year, and I've talked to people who are school board members. They said, you know, we had a little bit of a contingency fund here or there. So it took a couple of years, but then it started to hit. It started to hit really big and cumulatively. I want to move on to a discussion of GPL, which is a successor to the once all-powerful and much maligned Phoenix 40. GPL, which has recently been described by John Talton, the writer, as more or less a quote directly, the once powerful but now toothless and inert organization.
Ouch.
Wow.
Ouch.
Were you brought back to change that?
Nice to our guests.
You know, I haven't spoken with John since I've been back in the position, but I look forward to talking with him about that.
That predates your coming back, I'll tell
you. You know, that may be a perception that some folks had because for some time and just sort of a natural way, some styles of leadership have been to be very stealth and very behind the scenes and very quiet. And I think what we have learned in Arizona, maybe since 1070, Senate Bill 1070 or 1062, is that absence a real strong voice with aspirational tones and positive tones, you are left for perhaps the shrill voices of the extremes defining Arizona. And I think everyone is realizing that that's not good. It's not good for business. It's not just good, period. And so Greater Phoenix leadership and others are speaking out now and becoming more engaged and becoming more vocal about what's good about Arizona and talking about the positive about Arizona. And sometimes that means having to identify and talk with the folks who are doing all these very negative things as well.
And if you're podcasting this, you need to rewind what he just said. That was brilliant. And when you talked about SB 1070 and 1062, and without a strong community of business leaders to talk about the future and to talk about a positive future for Arizona, you're left with what we had. So amazing.
You know, I want to bring up a recent event, and it was one place where we saw GPL stepping in. That was a couple of years ago when there was a law passed that sort of masqueraded as religious freedom, but basically was a right to discriminate law.
Correct.
And I remember I had two reactions to that. One is I see GPL, among others, stepping up in that. But I also reacted by saying, you know, the real exercise of power would have been that thing never would have seen the light of day in the first place.
Right. And I'm happy to say that I think we now have leadership in Arizona, in the governor's office and other places that what you just described will be the case in the future. We certainly hope that that will be the case in the future because those kinds of initiatives just aren't good for Arizona. And more importantly, they don't accurately reflect Arizona.
They may reflect Arizona Republican primary voters.
A segment.
Well, now, come on, easy.
They perhaps represent a segment.
That's red meat stuff.
Perhaps. No? But that's not what Arizona is all about. That's certainly not what the business community is all about. And we're going to be moving on from those kinds of things in the future.
So what's the plan? What do you see? Do you see a change in GPL's involvement in local affairs,
and how
would that come about?
Well, we're working right now for this cycle, and we'll be working in future cycles to help identify and cultivate and educate people who want to get involved in public policy at every level, but certainly at our state legislative level, and electing people who will listen to the community from which they come, who will understand the complexities of public policy making and realize that it may not be exactly what you want or exactly the view that you were elected with, but your job when you get elected is to go down there and work with everyone else, look for opportunities to make things happen. And if that means you have to compromise a little bit with some other folks who, by the way, were also elected by Arizona voters and represent Arizona voters, then that's maybe what you need to do. So we have about eight folks who are non-incumbents who our members will be helping and supporting and then be there as a resource for as well, not just financially, but just from common knowledge and helping them understand the public policy issues.
Make sure GPL is actively supporting eight candidates at this point.
The members of GPL have identified some candidates that we've been encouraging and cultivating and helping learn about the process.
It's about money.
I fully expect that there will be members of GPL who will be writing checks to support those candidates.
Okay.
Yes.
And does GPL ever step up as a collective and back a candidate, or is it just members of?
We can only support initiatives or propositions as an organization. So we do not, GPL, Greater Phoenix Leadership, does not write checks for individual
candidates.
But
there certainly is capacity among your members to do so.
Well, you know, one of the great opportunities being the president and CEO of Greater Phoenix Leadership is just about any issue that needs addressing, if I take that issue to the 100 or so members of Greater Phoenix Leadership, the capacity in that room, quite honestly, can get just about anything done if it wants to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're at the point now where we're really excited about the opportunity to partner with other organizations in the community and individually and collectively come together to make some serious change.
What would you say is the number one priority?
Right now it is education. Mm-hmm. It is identifying what has to be after we successfully win Proposition 1-2-3 in partnership with other leaders and other organizations, legislative leadership, the governor, and making sure that we make those decisions and move those forward.
Is it more than just funding?
Of course.
Okay.
It's funding.
Because that's what we hear. As a parent of two school-age kids, this is all I hear is we need more money.
So you need money, but the other relationships there do have to do with standards. They do have to do with accountability. One of the things that we really, I think, need in Arizona are attainment goals. You know, if we don't set goals, we're certainly not going to get them. So what are the attainment goals for college graduation, for baccalaureates? Mm-hmm. What are the attainment goals for high school graduation and going into either a trade or to a higher
college
education?
College preparedness.
Oh, my goodness, all of those things are a part of it. So here's the one thing that we know about our educational ecosystem is that there's no one thing. We have to be involved.
That's great to
on
hear.
The P20 all the way from the beginning through perhaps graduate school. It's all interrelated. It's all connected. And we have to look at it that way. And we have to stay together and look at it that way.
Can we talk a little bit about Tempe when we come back?
Sure.
You had the reins there for a while.
A little bit.
For four terms, you had the reins.
Yes, 10 years.
Let's talk about what's going on right now.
All right.
Talk more with former mayor of Tempe, Neil Giuliano, next on the Think Tank.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
It's causing all kinds of problems over the break. And we're switching things up. You know why? Because we can do that. We can do that on the fly. Neil Giuliano joins us. Part of your resume, your extremely impressive resume, is four terms as the mayor of Tempe. Quick question, as I think that ASU is the heartbeat, is the pulse of Tempe. It's the center of Tempe, in my mind, and I think in a lot of people's mind. You were there from 94 to 04, 10 years.
Yes.
When ASU was the party school in this country. I think it bounced back and forth 1-2 spot every now and again.
You've tracked that. You've kept track of that.
Well, since you've left, there was a certain publication.
I haven't.
There was a certain publication that I might have been aware of that tracked those sort of
which
things.
Which he read for the articles.
Of course for the articles. Come on. Now, since you've left and now you've returned, but while you were away, while you were out, they've actually tried to grab those reins. The Tempe City Council, thank you, really tried to grab those reins and get rid of the peripheral partying and things. That
I think Michael Crow had something to do with that.
Michael Crow did too as well. So what are your thoughts on that and that change?
Well, I have not watched it, obviously, as closely as you have.
Well, we live right
number
here.
Number one. Look, the university had a tremendous opportunity that it has accepted and gone beyond, I think, expectations in terms of moving from a regional state university to now a globally influential, world-class university, which is tremendous. The opportunities mm-hmm. are tremendous. I think the work that has taken place at ASU to bring in new programs, to accelerate, look, they were just named one of the most innovative university in the United mm-hmm. States. I mean, that's pretty incredible.
It's huge, yeah.
So the alignment of capacity for doing better and doing really great things there has been tremendous. And now I think what we need to do is we need to try to get the state of Arizona to step back in over that same period of time while you were tracking how much of a party school ASU
yes,
was.
Keeping the stats, yes.
Keeping those stats. We actually lost state support.
Right.
And now Arizona residents' tuition is being covered, the cost of a student being educated is being covered at about 37% by the state of Arizona. And that needs to grow back up.
You know, that gets to something that I was going to ask about earlier. The most recent budget of the governor's, the submitted to the legislatures to restore $9 million to ASU. $99 million was taken away the year before.
Yeah.
Where's that on the GPL priority?
It's actually, when we look at the things that are significant for us to support candidates or not, it is on the list. Mm-hmm. Supporting Proposition 123 and then supporting restoration of funding for higher education is the number two thing that's mm-hmm. important to us. So it's very high on the list. And ASU has... You really have to give credit to ASU for the tremendous advancement that it has made in that 10 years mm-hmm. or so, at a time when the state was actually cutting it back.
Right.
So I give a lot of kudos to ASU and the leadership and where the university has come.
And that's why I was asking that question, because as the head now, the executive director of the Greater Phoenix Leadership, formerly Phoenix 40, the ASU, you have a lot of potential employees, this is your farm right here. This is right in your own backyard. You have ASU, and it has gone from being known as the party school to, just like you said, one of the most innovative schools in the country. And it's putting itself on the map, and that can only help all of the members of GPL.
Oh, absolutely. Look, it helps workforce readiness. It helps prepare our residents for their futures, which then they become great sustaining members of society overall. So it's all good outcomes when that happens.
Right.
I got another specific education question in terms of agenda and GPL. I want to know if this is on your radar screen. There is a proposal speeding, apparently, through both houses of the legislature right now that would expand the eligibility for private school vouchers from 5,500, a kind mm-hmm. of a test thing, to the full 1.1 million public school population.
Yeah.
Which I think could overnight decimate funding for public. And by the way, let me first of all say what happens with that. The very first effect would be every single student right now who's in a private school would get a voucher for whatever amount they set. We're talking thousands and thousands of dollars mm-hmm. with no benefit to anybody other than to the parents who are already able to pay private school tuition. Then in addition to that, so in other words, the argument that, well, you're losing the students so you don't have to cover them.
Yeah.
There's students who are already gone who are all of a sudden going to be funded at a huge level.
Yeah.
And then, it's with no cap. I look at that and I said, there's a potential for completely decimating the funding for public schools. Is that on your radar screen?
It's very much on our radar screen. It's very fair to say that while it's working its way through the legislature and some folks don't think it will have a chance of actually succeeding, we are concerned about it. We are talking with partner agencies and partner organizations about it and are monitoring it very closely because we would have the same kind of concerns that you've expressed.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I got a fun question for you.
A fun one?
Yeah.
Better than party school? Come
yeah,
on.
Well, I don't know. you were served as mayor roughly contemporaneous with that other mayor where the name sounded a lot like yours. Do you ever have any funny stories of being confused?
I do, actually, because we sat next to each other at the U.S. Conference of Mayors for his entire tenure and most of 8 of my 10 years.
You were alphabetically assigned.
They seat you alphabetically schoolroom. So we sat next to each other. And I did have one time where I was sitting in my seat looking at the newspaper one morning and someone came over and said, hey, can you tell me when the mayor's going to be here? And I said, well, what do you want to know? He says, well, we're just waiting for the mayor to arrive. And I said, well, I am the mayor. He said, no, you must work for the mayor. And I said, no, look at the name tags out front. I'm from Tempe, Arizona, not New York City. But, there's only a letter difference here. You better read those name cards, buddy.
Yeah. It was like
that was back when Rudy was normal. He was moderate.
Before every third word was 9/11.
He was moderate, very LGBT friendly. And then he ran for president and went pretty far.
It's
to the right.
It's that Republican primary electorate.
Yes,
it's a little different.
I thought of this, red meat up like that.
Said,
to this guy.
I had a conversation once with Rose Moffert. She encountered that all the time. She said, I'm sitting here with a big flock of white hair and somebody calls me governor and they think I'm Ann Richards.
So. Yes.
That's awesome. Hey, anyway, so we're here with Neil Giuliano. I see you almost
see
Giuliani now. See?
I still get that. It happens to me all the time.
We were just talking about Rudy. So it is.
You could get a restaurant reservation here and there out of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So
sure
big cultural difference. You moved back to Tempe from San Francisco.
It is. I kept my residency here and I was here quite often. I joke with friends that I went to Sky Harbor Airport to go to work for 10 years. But yeah, big cultural difference. The biggest one actually is I have to actually drive my car now that I'm here.
Yes.
My car that sat in the garage for 10 years and was only used when I was home here, it's a 2003 with 44,000 miles. So hopefully if anything does break down, they can still find parts for it.
Exactly. Wow. Be more specific culturally. What's as part of leadership in San Francisco to coming
city,
back to,
you know?
Obviously, and in the coming, we are a big city though, and I think a lot of people lose that that image that we are a big city,
big in numbers, but not
sure.
In you know, so San Francisco is less than a million people in 49 square miles,
right?
To put that in perspective, Tempe is about 36 square miles with 170,000 people,
right?
Density.
Density, urban environment, transportation, people from all walks of life, from the CEOs to the folks who are in service industries, are all on the streetcar together and all on BART together going to work. So it's just a very, very different environment.
You know, I want to throw out, because I spend a lot of time there.
Yeah.
And I want to throw out one big difference, and I think it's something about the cultural difference of the two. San Francisco just had a Super Bowl there. We have killed ourselves to try to bring them in. I don't think they're ever going to bid on another one. I don't think they want it.
Well, no, they got the Super Bowl because they had a new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the NFL's thing was they want to reward new stadiums.
I'm not sure that the city wants another Super Bowl, city of San Francisco.
I think if you took a vote of the people, you would be right.
Mm-hmm.
If you took a vote of the business leaders and the folks involved with the Convention Bureau and so forth, they would say it showed great return.
Well, if you're involved in the hotel business, there is a pretty good return.
Yeah,
I mean, it's differential.
It's not
uniform across the board.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep this going. More with, I want to just say former mayor, but that is not what you do. The executive director of the Greater Phoenix Leadership. You have, once again, a resume that would make most people's heads spin. It's great to have you here. We're going to keep plucking things from his brain. Neil Giuliano, coming up next.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with Mayor, once Mayor, Neil, you keep that honorific forever, don't you? You're Mayor?
Yes.
It's
no,
like being Mayor, Governor, whatever.
Sure. That's why I want to run for president. I just want to run for president one time so I can say former presidential candidate Mike Russell.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Yeah.
I want that moniker.
Yeah, you notice those ballots had 30 and 40 names on
Heck
it.
Heck yeah, they did.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Smart move.
One of them actually was one of the so-called main, I think it was Governor Gilmore, got beat by somebody who was like nobody and get like six votes to,
yeah, you know,
is embarrassing.
Give
but,
one vote. Mom,
I'm gonna change the subject. Gay rights and the really sea change of attitudes towards that. And I want to throw out my theory on this, that the process of gays coming out publicly, I'm looking for an explanation as a sociologist of a sea change of attitudes, the speed of which I have never seen on any other issue.
Sure.
And my theory is that a lot of gays came out publicly, and then people who thought of this as this strange thing from somewhere else that impacted somebody else, they discovered that gays included their family members, their friends, their coworkers, quote unquote, normal people.
Right.
You know?
And what enabled that to happen would be the sociological thing to study, right? What was the underlying reason that gave gay and lesbian people the comfort to come out in the great numbers that they did during the last 20 years? And I would say that it had to do with the way the culture evolved. And why did the culture evolve? I think the culture evolved because of media portrayals. I think the one thing that the folks on the religious right are actually accurate about was those people in Hollywood. Those people in Hollywood just love those gay people. Well, it wasn't a matter of loving them, but it was about telling their stories fairly, accurately, and inclusively. And what we know is when people tell their stories, that's what changes hearts and minds.
Mm-hmm.
So the 4 years that I spent at GLAAD, where we started the Religion, Faith, and Values Project to tell stories of LGBT people of faith, and we started the National Sports Desk to help LGBT athletes years before they actually came out of the closet, but meeting with them and talking with them and helping them get to a comfort level about their own authenticity to one day be able to come out. All of that really mattered in helping to change the culture so that, as I really very strongly believe, culture is what leads and laws and politics follow the culture. So the LGBT people who were deciding to live with authenticity and come out, the response to that was, yes, they're straight family members, they're straight colleagues, they're straight neighbors, all decided that they had to support them and they had to be there for them and they had to speak up. And that combination of people coming out that enabled then their straight allies. Look, the LGBT community is probably not the 10% that everyone used to say it is. It's probably more like 4 or 5%. So the LGBT...
That number, of course, was itself very political.
Right.
You know, the gay advocates were saying...
Right.
Well, they wanted a big number
right.
for legitimacy, but, and the other side wanted a tiny number.
Right. But it's really 4 to 5%. Mm-hmm. And so we relied on and needed the straight community, our straight allies, to stand with us. I mean, I can remember in the early days, 96, 97, when in Arizona... as the first openly gay mayor in the United States representing Tempe, we didn't have a whole lot of support, even from Democratic Party folks who were with us, mm-hmm. you know, with us in private. Now we have evolved.
Probably concerned about the electoral impact.
The electoral impact and the association because, you know, with a group of people that at that point were still polling at only maybe 40% approval in the broader public, right?
And 40% in a general election is death.
That's exactly right. So now we've evolved to where the Democrats and maybe some moderate Republicans certainly
the issue
not in
is
the
a
primary.
Winner. The issue is a winner.
Well, because it's about fairness
but
and it's about equality.
I want to suggest you said one thing though that I would like to push up against a little bit. I think very often the law comes first. I think of particularly a lot of the civil rights laws, which were passed in an environment where they did not have majority support.
Yep.
And that got emblazoned in the law, and I think a lot of culture changed as a result of that.
Oh, I think you're right, especially with the black community.
Yes.
I think the LGBT community is very different
mm-hmm.
Because the LGBT community, you know, we can be invisible.
Yeah.
The black community can't be invisible.
Yeah.
We can be invisible, and in fact, so many of us were for so long mm-hmm. that when we did finally choose to no longer be silent and no longer be invisible— mm-hmm. it really helped to change the culture.
And I think it's people outside of the community. I think it's a lot of the straight community that decided to stop being silent about it.
Right.
My own pastor, you could hear a pin drop. He said, by the way, there's gay people right in this audience right now. They're here every single week. I know a lot of them. It's all good. And people, what, the courtroom murmur. You get that whole thing. But then it's, oh, okay. You know, they're not making my kid gay. You know,
it doesn't work that way.
But you see what I'm saying? It's actual sunlight. It's actual. Here, we're going to put some sunlight on this. We're going to expose this. It's no big deal. And I think that made the change. Just kind of going to what Doc said a little earlier. That made the change. People just looking around, going, "Hey, Art, that's my neighbor."
But
over there.
My takeaway from this, it's something frankly I hadn't thought about, is the extent to which media. Portrayals create an environment, and people are watching a television show, and it's got gay characters, but it's not about that, and it's about sort of normal human interaction, and people sort of get it that their whole world doesn't fall apart.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I wanted to ask you, it's much less of an issue now, but certainly was a while back.
Oh, sure.
The whole process of outing people, involuntary exposure, this person's gay and, you know, against their will.
I think a lot of that has ceased, with the exception of when someone is in a public position mm-hmm. and is not living authentically, but living really with hypocrisy. So a closeted elected official who's voting against LGBT equality mm-hmm. and yet on the weekends or some other time is really, you know, is gay mm-hmm. but doesn't want anybody to know it.
Because they fear it would have a political impact.
Right. So I think those kinds of situations.
I would think possibly some athletes as well. There's a couple of athletes that have come out, but you know just tip of the iceberg.
Oh, sure.
That's sort of the last bastion.
And look, having some of the big names in Hollywood and other places who are now out, I've known for a long time, and I knew them when they were not out. And I can tell you what they have said, which was, look, I have 40 employees and they all work for me doing various different things on my fill in the blank TV mm-hmm. show, whatever it may be. And so I have to be conscious of that as I evolve with my mm-hmm. own comfort level with telling my living my truth and telling my story. We always at GLAD, we always respected that. We always understood that. And we always helped people along mm-hmm. that path.
It always seemed to me there was a reprehensible thing to do. There was a violation of somebody's individual rights. Even of course, the argument was that it was in furtherance of a political agenda that was correct.
Correct.
So,
that's right.
But to me, it kind of removed. I mean, it ought to be a personal choice.
The good thing today is, and you talk to some young people, young LGBT people, they don't even understand the term coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, coming out of what?
Yeah.
What am I
interesting.
In?
Interesting. That's right? A positive. That's a very positive.
So we've made some progress.
To take another analogy, was a lot of the younger women who voted 85% for Bernie Sanders and some of the older women supporters of Hillary Clinton are just in outrage about that. You know, how can you do that?
Yeah. So let me ask you, what's next? If marriage equality is here, it's the law of the land, what's the next big battle?
Well, the reality is I could get married in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
But if I worked for an employer who didn't like the fact that I was gay, that employer could still fire me.
That's the battle.
Could still fire me.
Got it. Right.
So, you know, in 30-some states, you can still be fired for being gay, even though you can get married in those states.
Right.
That obviously has to be fixed. And while some folks will say, well, that shouldn't be a federal issue, that should be a state-by-state issue, that's not right.
That's silly.
It's going to have to be a federal issue.
It does seem to me that that might be grist for a Supreme Court case.
Yeah, it's just
kind of like the gay marriage thing.
Right.
Say, look,
course.
Equal protection.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Where's the equal protection if you can be fired for this?
Right. So. Right.
Yeah.
But that's I think is a very real issue. Mm-hmm. Marriage, the attainment of marriage equality, and I'll preface civil marriage equality. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about one's religious beliefs and
mm-hmm. sure.
and going into your temple or your church and demanding your religion.
A religion is free to believe what it believes.
Of course, and marry whoever they want to marry mm-hmm. or not. Mm-hmm. We've always been talking just about how our government treats all of its citizens. Mm-hmm.
Well, fascinating and wide-ranging discussion. Neil Giuliano, president, I think we may have demoted you president and CEO of Greater Phoenix
CEO.
Leadership.
Oh, see, I had, in fairness, I had that on my notes, executive director. It's
the old function. It basically means you're getting paid to do it, among other
things.
It's
all good. Thanks for having me.
Just a little background on reaching at MikeO'Neill.org. You can see, push the button on the front, says radio. It'll link to all of our older shows and even the current ones, which some of those it'll take you to KTAR site, but you can get there easily through MikeO'Neill.org.
Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank
great,
you very
great
much
time.
For having me.
Thank you for spending
Anytime.
Some time with us right here on the Think Tank.